Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 30th, 2011, and tonight will be a continuation part two, I guess due to popular demand, one might say, I'm doing kind of a mini-series on Planet X, just because that's somewhat in people's mind these days. There's a lot of new listeners out there. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of ongoing misrepresentation on the internet. A bunch of people running around pretending to be experts who sit in their grandma's basement and read everything on the internet and then repeat it and pretend to be experts. Yeah, everything in the world going on, and basically the public is the victim of this. Especially created misinformation. It just goes on and on. And it just, you have to step aside and take a look at this and say, you have to ask one question. Why on earth are these people in control, spending so much time and effort and money just trying to distort this topic? What is it with this topic? Why is there so much effort to distort it? Why have people been killed over this? Not only a few people, but a lot of people. So the question is, what's up with this story? And then the question, is there anything going on right now? Let me just comment on that, because people are always asking me, is Planet X coming? When is it coming, etc.? And my first comment to most people is, why are you asking when Planet X is coming? Because then they would go, oh, well, I want to prepare. Well, if you're not prepared, preparedness is the same for everything, whether it's a flood, whether it's your house burning down, whether it's an economic failure and you just lost your job. Preparation is the same as if Planet X is coming through. And if Planet X comes through and destroys everything and pulls off the atmosphere from Earth, we're all going to be dead anyway. But the point is, Planet X coming through does not mean ultimate destruction of the world. It might be a minor event where we have, say, the power grid go down and it's not able to be repaired. If the power grid did go down on a wide scale, just imagine, you can't just bring it back magically, because it takes equipment. People have to go out in trucks. The trucks need gasoline, and electricity pumps the gasoline into the trucks. So nothing would happen. If our electric grid went down, life as we know it would cease. People in the cities would have nothing. I mean, the cities would be, they depend 100% on electricity for all the infrastructure. Is the most important thing you need every day. Water depends on electricity being pumped to you, being moved in stations, and the waste, the human waste being pumped away, all with electrical pumps. It's estimated that 20% of the U.S. electrical consumption of electricity is on motors, electrical motors. So that's a huge amount of work being done by motors that would not happen. As far as people being prepared, if they want to prepare for Planet X and they're worried about it, then you're not prepared, and you're not prepared for anything else either. So just a little comment on that. But of course, people, if there's a major worldwide event, then people would want to know, and I can understand that. And we have two aspects. We have professional astronomers, Tier 1 and Tier 2. The Tier 2 guys are not going to see it, probably, and get information to you. They're just not going to have access to equipment that would allow them to see it. Remember that astronomical equipment is not something you just go and, oh, let's everybody look into the telescope tonight. No, it's controlled, very controlled. You have to sign up sometimes years in advance for your project to get a certain amount of time, one night possibly, on a major telescope. And then you go back and for the next 2 years you crunch your data that you got on that night and you write a paper, and that's the way astronomy works today. So it's not like all these astronomers have access to all the telescopes, these wonderful instruments that are built out there. So at any rate, then you have the Tier 1 scientists who, I guarantee you, are not going to tell you anything, because they don't work for you. They work for somebody else, the higher echelon people of the world. And remember, throughout history, the leaders, the real leaders, the some very demonic, you might say, leaders, all looked towards astronomy, astrology, towards the sky for control, for their, so they, the astronomers that work at those upper levels are, really have sold their souls to the devil in a sense. And some of them, once their usefulness is done, they find that they are then a liability. So, they become expendable, because there's always someone else who can take their place. Some scientist, some young, unaware, green scientist who will be thrilled by the fact that they give him security clearance and can do all of these cool things, and he's a top-level scientist, and it's secret, and but they don't really understand who they are working for or what they are doing. So there's always a fresh batch of those guys walking around, and then they have their egos. Woo! There's nothing bigger than an ego of a young astronomer who all of a sudden is brought up and shown some of the aspects of the dark side world, so to speak, with the access to equipment. And so for a time, they're on top of their game until they find out that that was nothing but a big trap. And now they're trapped. They can't talk to anybody out there. They're under gag orders, and then they realize that they better just play the game, march the march, until they're retired, and hope nobody says anything to them, hope that nobody comes along and says, this guy is a liability. So they have to play steady Eddie, straight as an arrow can be, because if not, they might end up dead. Isn't that neat? So that's the life of a Tier 1 astronomer. And like I say, they bring him in there, and before they understand it, it's just like politicians. They think, oh, I'm elected, I'm off to Washington, and all of a sudden the pretty girls come in and all of this, and before they know it, they're compromised. And they don't have a life anymore. They're controlled. So it's the same with astronomers, although it's more like they are bought with their egos. There's nothing easier to control than a guy with an ego, and the CIA and the, which is the police force of the World Bank, by the way, not your protecting agency of this country. Those people know, they have lists of hot points for people. What can they do to control these people? What can they do to, infiltrate their lives and control them? And ego is one of the biggest, brightest bulbs on the tree. Because what's a guy with ego? Well, gee, he's blind to everything else. He doesn't see anything. He can only see himself and how great he is, or she, if the case may be in the case of a lot of women that are in science today. And that ego is so big that they can control them, they can manipulate them, and before they know it, those people don't even know who they are anymore. And I've seen this happen dozens of times. But at any rate, that's just to give you a little bit of insight into the world of science. So before I go into the topic of the part two of Planet X special here, a series of shows, and this is going to go on for a number of weeks, obviously, as I cover different aspects. By the way, I left off last week's show talking about Hale-Bopp. And during the era of Hale-Bopp back in the mid-90s, the Vatican and a lot of scientists thought that that was wormwood, that was Nibiru, and they thought that. Hale-Bopp had an enormous, enormous nucleus, and it was on a somewhat of a planetary orbit, even though it was 90 degrees, its orbit was 90 degrees to the plane of the planets. But the thing was, when Hale-Bopp came in, it was on a very near direct collision course with Earth when it was first seen by the Tier 2 astronomers. Now, you have to understand that Hale-Bopp was seen long before by the Tier 1 astronomers. So they waited and they waited, and when it was finally announced that Hale-Bopp was discovered by the two amateurs, Hale and Bopp, Alan Hale from, I believe he lives down in the southwestern U.S. anyway, has nice equipment down in the southwestern U.S. He was one of the co-discoverers, and then a guy named Bopp, I think, from Japan. So the Hale-Bopp, they discovered on the same day when Hale-Bopp kind of exploded into brightness. But understand that NASA, up in the Tier 1 levels, knew about Hale-Bopp for a long time before it was discovered. And by the way, that's the same case as with Comet Elenin, which has been somewhat of a diversion for a lot of people recently. Once again, a very well-crafted misinformation program with a lot of disinformation people floating around that thing, some of them trying to hoodwink me into that. Of course, these are young people, too. They're inexperienced. They don't know that I know their games backwards and forwards. And by the way, that in talking about either the disinformation campaign for Hale-Bopp or for Planet X or for Elenin, Comet Elenin, or if you look at all of the hot points that the CIA have for controlling people, they haven't been able to control me because I don't have those things. They can't control me with ego. I work by myself. I fund my own research. I fund my own program, everything. So they don't have any way to control me, and I'm on to their games. So I become a hard target for them. And so they try little games every now and then, like this thing with Elenin. They got some lady that claims to talk to aliens who has confirmed, the aliens have confirmed the work of Jim McCanney, and then they come in with the Discover magazine people and all of this to tell you how ridiculous this is, a well-crafted misinformation program to try and smear my name. This is the level of Penny Annie goofy stuff that these people are trying to pull. Anything to try and, say, muddy up my name, but they don't realize that I've been around. I was doing my work in publishing papers in astrophysics journals and attacking the main science community. I was doing that before any of these guys learned how to pick their noses. So they don't think that they're going to fool me, a bunch of newbie disinformation crew people. But at any rate, be that as it may, that's going to continue. That's always going to be there. That's the way things are. Before I get into the Planet X Part 2 series, I've got a whole bunch of announcements. I'll try and race through these so I can get to the main science topic. This past week, once again, phony videos of alien invasion of the United Kingdom. This is being promoted. There's a TV show on where a whole town is taken over by the military and everybody is there. Little kids have guns and there's all kinds of conflict and, oh, I don't know, intrigue, so to speak, with this little town that's been taken over by aliens. So this theme, and somebody is really pounding on it pretty hard. And so I would say that just about as sure as someday we're going to see Planet X, I'm not giving you a date and I don't know when, I can say that probably sometime within the next year, I would be surprised if we don't have a phony alien invasion scenario with Obama on the newly controlled national emergency broadcast system, telling everybody what to do and how serious this is and how we all have to get together, and we are absolutely need a one-world government to control this situation, to coordinate everything for the safety of the public. I can just see it. So anyway, that is pretty big in the news. It has been. There was a phony, fake alien invasion thing in South America. The news coming out a number of weeks ago, maybe a month, month and a half ago. But anyway, you're going to continue to see that. And of course, is there a possibility of an alien invasion? Well, I don't have that information, and I only give out information if I have real, true, solid scientific information, and I don't regarding a real alien invasion. One thing I will tell you, though, and this is coming from my scientific work, that if you were an alien, then you would come in riding on a comet. A comet would be a source of energy, a source of water, a source of materials, and so aliens would typically be associated with comets. Now, let me just say something, that Comet Elenin, there's been a lot of hype that it is occupied by aliens, and that it's actually an alien spaceship. There's all kinds of hype. I mean, that's potentially possible. Is it true? I mean, I don't know. I don't have information regarding that. I know for a fact that NASA was receiving some kind of apparent intelligence signals from Hale-Bopp. That's why all of the hubbub, that's why they killed the Heaven's Gate people, because the Heaven's Gate people had about 10,000 people on their way to Los Angeles at the time to have a reunion. They were going to have a Woodstock festival type of reunion, although these were the Heaven's Gate type people who were very health-oriented. They had been waiting for a signal, and they saw Hale-Bopp as their signal. They were going to have maybe 100,000 people out on a hillside outside of Los Angeles waiting for the aliens to come in. And so they couldn't allow that, so they sent in the troops to kill them. A phony suicide. That's what happened. Then how they had the... they were working on this overtime. They took down the Heaven's Gate real web page and put up this phony one with all kinds of goofy stuff on it and made them look like a bunch of nutcases, which wasn't the case. These were health people. They were very intelligent people. They were programmers. They were building firewalls and transmission encryption software that the government could not break, at a time when the government was trying to develop its own master version of that type of software scenario, firewalls, and do everything for everybody software, called Promise. And so, anyway, I'll get into that a little bit later. But the point is that if you were an alien simply from a scientific aspect, due to the dirty snowball comet model once again being promoted by standard science, tier 2 science, as this is what a comet is, and they keep promoting that and promoting it. Well, why do they do that? They don't want the public to know that a comet is not a dirty snowball. It's a very active electrical thing out there. It's gathering all types of very usable materials, including water, something that aliens coming from a long trip through interplanetary space would want. The electric field would be used to put the brakes on the spacecraft coming in, literally. And when you leave the solar system, you would leave on the electric field and the resulting magnetic field, the electric current and magnetic field from the comet, you would leave using an electromagnetic propulsion system, getting a boost out of the solar system from that comet. So a comet would absolutely be a place where there might be aliens. Do the comets live in the middle of the nucleus? Probably not. Probably not, because, for example, Comet Elenin is a local comet in our solar system. Could it have aliens living there? Anything is possible. But don't start saying things without proof. The sky could turn red and yellow tomorrow. There could be reasons scientifically why that would happen. But don't go running up and down the street yelling that the sky is going to turn yellow and green tomorrow or some other color. There are reasons why this could happen, but that doesn't mean that's what's happening. So you need real information, and that's the problem with the internet today, is there's so much unreal information. At any rate, okay, so just I'm going to be going through some of these little aside topics as I go through these discussions because they're all very related. So once again, alien invasion, I mean, I don't have any information. Are you going to see a lot of misinformation? Yes. Is this going to be used for a control mechanism for the New World Order? Yeah, they're going to do it. They're going to use that. Could there be a real alien invasion? Sure. But I'll tell you one thing is for sure. They don't want you or your group or anybody else out there talking to aliens. That's why the Skywatch offices were set up all around the world through the last decade. This was a group of offices funded through basically through the CIA and their buddies. They had 60 offices worldwide, and the idea was that if you saw an alien event of some type, an alien spacecraft, you would quick run over to the Skywatch office and tell them about it. Well, the whole idea was to get people to report directly to the people who run the New World Order. They wanted people reporting to their network, so they made this good guy network out there, just happened to have 60 offices around the world. So you can be very handy, so you can quick run in there and report your alien invasion or your UFO sighting or encounter of the third kind, whatever. But anyway, there's another whole topic. That'd be a great show sometime to talk about Skywatch, where it came from, what it was doing. And there are independent agencies that started, like MUFON. The idea there was that they would go out, and these were individuals, and they would do individual field work, and a lot of good work was done through MUFON, but it didn't take about a New York second for that to become infiltrated by the same people who run Skywatch. At any rate, all kinds of interesting history revolving around the topic of aliens. And that actually weaves throughout the whole topic of Planet X. It started way back when the Anunnakis claimed that they descended from a group of extraterrestrials that came here and planted the Earth people. There's stories, too, that the aliens came and mixed with giants, the old giant races that are talked about in the ancient texts that populated Earth, and the human race was what evolved. There's all kinds of similar stories. I'm not going to go through all of those. Anyway, let me quick try and go through my announcements here. Okay, so impending phony alien invasion. Watch for it in a supermarket or a movie theater near you. The Earth, there have been studies talking about Earth volcanoes and CO2 production and whether man makes more CO2 than volcanoes. Well, isn't it interesting that scientists, of course, started measuring and calculating, and these are the Tier 2 scientists, of course, and they show that really man makes more CO2, and this is all revolving around the greenhouse effect, the global warming debate. And so the idea is that they're saying, oh no, man creates much more CO2 and man is the cause of Earth global warming. And so, by the way, if that's the case, we're sure having a year this year that disproves any of that with the cold and, there's another little aside note. I asked people on a previous show to send in if there's any place in the country that has knee-high corn by the 4th of July, and some people did. But what's very clear is, yes, there are some little pockets here and there, which you would expect, around the country where people had relatively dry conditions, relatively temperature-stable conditions for a period long enough to get the corn in, and their little area didn't get flooded. Some of these, oddly enough, are in the middle of Nebraska and the central U.S., where the tremendous flooding is occurring. But 5 miles away, there's no agriculture at all to speak of, but there's some of these little pockets where, indeed, there is 3 or 4 foot high corn at this moment. And so I knew this would happen, but inevitably when the people sent the picture, they would say, if you drive 5 miles away, there is no corn. This happens to be a little patch where one guy happened to get his corn in, and it's succeeding. So, but the basic result there is that this year is going to be a bumper bad year for crops in the United States, which, by the way, is the place that grows food for the entire world and the breadbasket of the world, so to speak. So prices of food are going to skyrocket this fall, and the availability of food is going to skyrocket. It's very strange that this happens at a time when people simply can't afford food. So there's a dichotomy for the food stores, and now I've noticed this. Americans don't eat a lot of fruit. So when you go to the grocery store, if you want to buy strawberries, you can get a boatload of strawberries for almost nothing. Strawberries don't last long. The stores have to get them and sell them quickly and get them out of there. So the strawberries typically come from foreign countries, but they don't last long, so they have to get them in there, sell them, and so the price of strawberries is down. I don't know many people that are going to live on strawberries. You see what I mean? So the food distribution system is all messed up. The price of meat, if you go to the meat counter, you would think you were investing in your next car when you went to the meat counter. It's like, no, $10 a pound for meat? I don't think so. There are some places you can go and still get reasonable meat prices, but they are few and far between. So at any rate, but this is goes back to the issue of weather, the terrible weather that we've had. And remember, we've had a few thousand years of relatively stable weather on this planet. It hasn't always been like this. We haven't always had stable, nice weather. Within the last 10,000 years, we had an ice age. The Earth, ice sheets from that, the glaciers, some of them are just melting away right now. And people go, oh, that's global warming. No, we're just getting back to the temperature that Earth should be. I talk about that in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia. All of my books, by the way, are written for the general public. And they're also written so scientists can read them and understand what's really going on in the world today. Although scientists really are some of the worst batch of people to try and educate, the problem is they think they already know everything. They got a PhD. Wow. Don't try and impress me. Because what they got is a PhD 99% of the time in bad science. So the scientists are some of the worst people to try and educate because their mind's already made up. They got a PhD. So, and I know a lot of good PhDs. They're well-meaning, but I'll tell you, you learned some very bad, wrong science when you went to school, buddy. And unless you really get down to brass tacks and start to change it, on a very fundamental level, you're going to be walking around the rest of your life with your head in the ozone layer. Okay, so anyway, there has been a study regarding volcanic carbon dioxide emission and this versus human CO2 emission. The study concludes that man produces more CO2. And, of course, therefore, the implied conclusion is that man is the contributor to the greenhouse effect, the global warming, and man is the cause of this. And that has been their cry, battle cry, all along. So, but we are in a period of actually relatively low volcanic activity. Remember that about 10,000 years ago, at the onset of the current age, at the end of the Holocene period, when all of the mammals died off, the woolly mammoths and the saber-toothed tiger and that crew of critters, when they died off in the last mass extinction, which, by the way, corresponded to the invasion of the solar system by the comet that eventually became the planet Venus. And this is, by the way, what a lot of people mistake as Planet X. There's a lot of confusion out there. Venus probably came in at the time when there were many, many big comets in the solar system at the same time. And that one happened to connect correctly to come in, weave its way through the solar system after being captured by Jupiter to become the planet Venus. There are indications, by the way, that Venus, talking about planet X type topics, that Venus maintained its tail up into about, well into the people who are really watching, that they were able to see the Venus tail up into possibly 1000 AD still. There are indications that the Mayans were still able to see the comet tail and talked about it. But at any rate, the issue with scientists today making studies comparing man-made CO2 with emission of carbon dioxide from volcanoes is that we are in a very relatively low ebb of volcanic activity. 10,000 years ago, every volcano on the planet was going off, and it was at the beginning of the last ice age. So clearly, CO2 emission is a mini factor, and it has just about nothing to do with anything. But there again, that's just like the bad science revolving around weather, where they claim that, for example, warm water creates hurricanes. Well, it's absolutely absurd. There's not enough energy in warm water to create all the energy in the hurricane, and once the hurricane is going, it has a lot more energy. It should be driving energy out of the system. How do you get a low energy source like a warm ocean to pump energy into an already going hurricane? It defies the second law of thermodynamics. It's absolutely absurd and ridiculous. But you have fleets of scientists at MIT and Harvard and Yale and Caltech and all around the world saying the same thing. How could these scientists all be wrong? Well, they're tier two scientists. That's why they're there. They're there to feed the garbage science to you. But the idea that volcanoes are not a factor in global warming, well, it's really a moot point because none of these factors have anything to do with anything. At the time, the volcanoes were all going off at the same time because we were having a major event a couple times, the great comet that became the planet Venus. That great comet passed near Earth twice. Two gravitational events that changed our orbit. It changed the length of the day. The original Mayan calendar only had 360 days. And the new modern Mayan calendar still only has 360 days, but they tack on five more just to compensate for the number of days. Velikovsky has proven this all over the world. The calendars were 360 days. And so now we're dealing with an issue. And by the way, there's a lot of misinformation about the Mayan calendar and 2012 and all of this. The Mayan calendar does not predict the end of the world on December 21st, 2012. The other point is that the Mayan calendar was based on the cycles of Venus. That Venus was the centerpiece of the Mayan calendar. The what they call the long count calendar, really you cannot extrapolate backwards because it was developed around about 1000 AD by the modern Maya. But the Venus calendar was the center calendar of the Mayan, what you might call their science and religion, which were mixed together. The long count calendar was just a social calendar. It was just kind of like a geopolitical calendar that they used for daily events, but the real Mayan calendar had nothing to do with the sun and the moon or anything else. It had to do with the calendar and cycles of Venus. So at any rate, as I said, topic of Planet X, all of these things mix in. So you have to have an understanding of history, you have to have an understanding of calendars, you have to have an understanding of ancient text and what they're really trying to tell us. And you have to have an understanding that modern science is wrong in about 99.9% of everything it's trying to tell you. Okay, so anyway, on to the next topic. Just a quick aside, this past week we had solar storming. And as I said before, scientists have predicted that we're heading into possibly a mini ice age because of the lack of sunspots. And there's historical evidence for sunspot count implying a climate change going to much cooler. So I think it's odd that the greenhouse people are talking global warming when we had the coolest spring on record. It just nosedived this year, and we're just finally around the 4th of July, just starting to get some decent weather here. I predicted it about June 10th, but I think there's some other factors going on in the solar system that we're not aware about, possibly something out there in the distance that the average amateur astronomer is unable to see, possibly a Planet X-type object coming in from the south. There's ample information to indicate that something is coming in from the south. And remember that when these objects are out in free space, they're moving relatively slowly. And as the sun's gravitation starts to work on them and pull them in, they start to speed up and speed up and speed up. But it's a very slow process. So the majority of objects out there that could be potential Planet X objects, that's not to say some might be coming in, some errant object from beyond our solar system that has nothing to do with our solar system. Something could come in at enormous speed and be here in a day. That could happen, but the ones that are in what you might call planetary or solar system orbits around our sun, they would be moving relatively slow, very slowly, until they start getting in towards the inner solar system where they finally break the solar capacitor and explode into cometary activity. And there's ample information that there is something down to the south. Just the fact that everybody's running down there to build telescopes. As I said, you and I don't have access to those telescopes. Not many people I know can just kind of get in the family plane and fly down to Antarctica, walk up and knock on the door of one of those amazing astronomical facilities down there and say, "Hey, we just flew down with the family. We'd like to take a look through your telescope." I don't think you'd get very far. So, at any rate, there's a lot of activity going on, big telescopes down in the southern hemisphere. And what are they looking for? Clearly something's going on there. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. And so the point is that as a group of scientists, and I actually agree with them, that the sunspot count indicates that the Earth is heading into a mini cooling period. That's true. At the same time, we are getting tremendous solar flaring that is not commensurate with the level of other solar activity. So there's two parts to the sun. There's the solar light, and which apparently is in heat output, which is related to the magnetic field, which is related to the sunspot count, etc., and that seems to be diminishing, whereas the electrical activity is booming and tremendous flares. Just the other day, the biggest flare anybody had ever seen on the sun, and scientists are going, "Gee, what's going on here?" So it looks like some electrical activity is going on the sun, which is just does not relate to anything else. So it has to point me in a direction to say something is out there. Something is causing the tremendous winds we're seeing. We've seen tremendous winds throughout the springtime, very abnormal wind activity. So just reporting that this past week we had some fairly significant CME activity, which is not unusual for the sun going into its active period as we go into the next solar cycle. But it's not commensurate with the fact that the rest of the sun is seemingly shutting down a notch. Not a lot, but enough to make us cooler. So at any rate, the other thing I wanted to report is there was an asteroid discovered recently, very recently, called 2011 MD Mary Dog, and it passed only 12,000 kilometers, about 7,000 miles away from Earth's surface. This happened last Monday in the morning, and the approach was so close that it drastically altered the orbit of this asteroid. And just to give you a little physics here, let's take something the size of this asteroid and Earth. They had a gravitational encounter. This was a gravitational, like a spring, so to speak, a gravitational spring attaching the asteroid to Earth. And so the asteroid's orbit was changed. Well, Earth's orbit was changed slightly also, but nothing that you would even be able to measure, even if you had the best astronomical equipment on Earth. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So if the asteroid's orbit changed, it changed by a lot, but Earth's orbit changed by a minuscule, let me say it a fourth time, minuscule amount, an unmeasurable amount. And this kind of activity happens all the time. But I'm sure there'll be some internet wannabe out there that's going to jump up and down and say, Earth's orbit has changed, this astronaut, and there's all kinds of misinformation. Who knows? The internet is full of misinformation. But at any rate, the point here is that if that had hit Earth, and that was a pretty close call, if that had hit Earth, it would have done some serious damage. It was about 20 meters, they say, in diameter. That's about 60-foot rock. And the one that blew a one-mile hole in the Earth's surface down in Winslow, Arizona. I've been down to that site and looked at it. Pretty impressive. If you ever get a chance to pass through there, Winslow, Arizona, and go to the crater there. I have kind of a comical story to tell about that crater. One time I was with a friend, and I had been in that area a couple times, but I was on a schedule and I had to get someplace. I was going actually to Sonora, to Arizona to give a talk, and so I couldn't stop. And another time I was going to the UFO conference down in Laughlin, Nevada, and I couldn't stop. So there was one time I planned, and I said, I'm going to go finally to see the crater in the Earth at Winslow, Arizona. And I was all planned, and there was nothing on my schedule, and I was all set to get there. And I drove up, and there's like a couple mile long road off the main highway. You have to drive up to the gate where you enter, and there's like a little store there, and I think you buy your ticket there. I can't remember the scenario, but anyway. So I get up there and I drive up to the gate, and it's like desert. There's not a tree, there's not a bush, there's not a blade of grass, it's just desert, rock. And so this guy, dressed in a like federal forestry uniform, comes walking across the desert out of nowhere, and he sees me in my car, and he comes, well, what is this guy doing? Comes walking up to me, and he goes, the park just closed. and I couldn't see the crater. So anyway, to continue the story, eventually I did get to see the crater. If you get to see that, go there, but make sure you go during the open hours. Okay, so at any rate, here's a topic I do want to cover. $20 billion a year being paid by the U.S. taxpayers to cool the tents in Afghanistan, and they show a bunch of military canvas-covered tents in the desert that are covered with, they look like they're insulated, but each one has a big air conditioning unit sticking out the side. They have to haul the gasoline in. They say thousands of troops have died just trying to get the gasoline into these stations where the troops live, in these rows and rows of tents that are air-conditioned because the temperature there can get up to 125 degrees. Now, I just want to make a few comments on this. That first of all, why didn't they dig a trench in the ground and put in a real barracks of some kind underground It would take very little to cool that, and it wouldn't be exposed to the sun. The Earth is a great natural insulator, and it would hardly take anything at all to cool the barracks and the bases for the troops. But they have many small tents. These are like room-sized tents lined up all over in the desert out there where the troops have to stay. So they have many small buildings, which means that the surface area per volume area is the highest. And so it's the old issue that one big building is easier to heat and cool than lots of little buildings with the same amount of space and volume. So most of the heat is lost there, and these are extremely inefficient. How do you like to air condition a tent in 125 degree weather? So most of the heat is, well, most of the air conditioning, of course, is lost immediately. This is the least efficient possible way to do this, but maybe that's the goal here, to make the most inefficient way possible. That provides the most cost and therefore the most profit. So one can basically make the following statement, and this is something that I've said, other people have said. You take the profit out of war, war would stop today. If you took the control mechanism out of war, it would have stopped yesterday. So then you look at the inefficiencies of converting gasoline into electricity by generators running out in the middle of the desert just to run these air conditioners. It's just absurd. The absurdity here, $20 billion a year, that's more than the national budget of NASA. That's more, there's some examples here in this article I'm looking at, this National Public Radio article. That's more than the NASA budget. It's more than the British Petroleum has paid for the damage during the Gulf oil spill. It is more than the G8 has pledged to foster new democracies in Egypt and Tunisia. So $20 billion a year going up in smoke in the middle of the Afghan desert to cool the troops. Boy, this show is getting away from me here. I talked about the solar storm. This story really has to come out today. Microsoft patenting a software which will allow uncontrolled, basically monitoring of all computer use, of all telecommunications from computers, and that includes from all devices, including handheld phones, email, little readers, whatever type of digital device. Microsoft wants a patent on the market to monitor all activity, and this is being done for the government. So I'm sure they'll get their patent, and that'll give an exclusive control mechanism for the government to monitor anything you do, say, or you're surfing on the internet. So Big Brother is alive and well. Just another quick aside here. Don't go camping in Minnesota due to budget issues. The Minnesota State Parks have closed. And so, all of the state facilities are closing. State workers and retirees who had their insurance, health, life, and other benefits paid for by the state are losing those because the state is not paying its bill. The impending shutdown of the United States is occurring every day around us, and a lot of people just don't understand. The state bureaus, like the license bureau, however, to function well. These are bureaus that, for very few people, make an incredible amount of money. Every car license, every canoe or boat or a watercraft or just about anything else that moves needs a license. So people are filing into these offices, and what exactly do you get for your license? There's no real service that is provided by the state other than saying they need money from you. And there's a growing list of expenses that they're charging for, but there's no real service. It is becoming increasingly more expensive. as states scramble to find more ways to fleece the public with fewer people working to pay for all of this. The social work departments are struggling to get more and more people in so they can keep operating. It's all breaking down. These things cannot continue operating like this. I've got a special I'm going to do, going to pre-announce this. I'm going to talk not only about HARP, how HARP works, but I'm going to be talking about some very other important aspects of HARP that's in the topics that people are not covering, some inside type of topics regarding HARP. Just a quick question. Now, I've talked before about the Japanese Fukushima nuclear plant and the radiation spill, the related tsunami and earthquakes, etc. I'm beginning to become 100% convinced that that was not a natural event, that was a man-made event. And we have people running around that are doing this, doing these types of things, and it's just absolutely ludicrous. I'm running short of time, so I'm going to go right into the Planet X issues here. Last week, I left the Planet X topic talking about all of the people that died in the Hale-Bopp era. And I listed them off, the Harrington, the Heaven's Gate, a little later Schumacher, who was going to go public with the information regarding Hale-Bopp. And let me just make a point, I made this earlier in the show, that the Vatican, when Hale-Bopp was first discovered on a public basis, they asked NASA, is this wormwood? And that shows, number one, that they all know that when this thing comes in, it's going to look like a comet. That's why there's such a tremendous effort right now to smear my name with the Comet Elenin campaign. That's because I'm the one that's out there telling the real story about comets and the fact that when something big comes in, it's going to appear as a comet. Historically, the people that guard the ancient texts and then put out misinformation for the public, that includes the Vatican, the bankers, the secret societies that are associated with the banking, the international banking community, that run the governments, that run the CIA and other intelligence organizations throughout the world. And you see that countries like Iran and Cuba know the game. That's why they're considered axis of evil and terrorists, because they know the game. How about Bolivia now? Venezuela, all of these countries that know the game. They're not playing the game the proper way. So they're axis of evil terrorists. But at any rate, the point is that when Hale-Bopp first came in, it was on a direct collision course with Earth. Its orbit was meant to miss Earth by about 1 million miles. That's about four times the distance to the moon. And so for something that size, much bigger than Earth, possibly, it would have done a significant amount of damage. And by the way, that orbit, from what I understand, came to the inside of Earth's orbit. In other words, it would have blocked the sun. We would have had tremendous electromagnetic interactions with that comet. We would have been in the tail of that comet or in the coma of the comet for probably, I would say a good month. And so we would have had Earth would have had the most devastating event since the Venus event. And so astronomers knew this. I'll recount a story. The day that Hale-Bopp was discovered and announced, I was on a more friendly basis with the guys at Goddard Space Flight Center. And I called up the office, and the secretary, who was on a first-name basis with me, because I called so much and talked to the various scientists there, she recognized my voice on the phone. And I heard all this screaming in the background and just activity, and I said, what's going on there? And she said, the new comet. She said, this comet is, she said, it's huge. And at first I thought she meant it's a huge story. It's like a newsworthy event, and everybody was excited that there was a new comet discovered. And what I later came to understand was that the size of the comet was huge. Well, when it was first discovered, of course, at that point, they would have had an easy time looking at the nucleus of the comet. So the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was huge. So that's the only thing I could tell you regarding. And then later, NASA modified its story. They said first that the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was 40 miles across, and then they reduced it a little bit after that. Well, of course, the real size of Hale-Bopp's nucleus was planet-sized. And so the point being that as it was discovered, now here again, I want to give you the characteristics of this. Harrington was in New Zealand in the late 1980s and the early 1990s. He was down there photographing objects coming in from that region where Hale-Bopp was coming in. He clearly had photos of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. He clearly had those photos of this object coming into the solar system. He went back the second time to take the photographs that would give him a solid orbit calculation for the orbit of that thing coming in. This was, remember, under contract from NASA, and the point was that it was big enough that it was altering the orbits, pulling down on the orbits of Neptune and Uranus, which are big planets out in the far solar system. So this was a big object. It had to be something like that kind of size, a big planet, and it was coming into the solar system from the south. And so, as we all know, Harrington didn't make it. His information did not become public. Gene Shoemaker later died, who had access to that same information and was going to make it public. Both of them dying under more than questionable circumstances. But at any rate, I'm running out of time again. Make sure you visit the website. This show goes so quickly. I will be continuing the Planet X series next week, so make sure you join me. Visit the website jmccsci.com. Some of the food items are running out, so if you want to order food items, get there today, because quite a few of them are running out. These are the Mountain House. The pre-filter is still in stock. We're keeping that ahead of the orders somehow. I don't know how. But all of the other items there. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.